Hello, thank you for calling the FIA.
Hello, this is Donald Trump. Can I speak to who's in charge, please?
Oh, certainly. Just a moment, Mr. President.
Hello, Mohammed Ben Sulayem speaking. How can I help?
Hello, Ben. Can I call you Ben? I was just watching the English Formula Grand Prix.
You mean the British Grand Prix? Yes, sir, the F1 sprint race.
Well, you know the two American drivers racing in your formula?
American drivers? Which ones?
That Lewis Hamilton guy.
He's British, sir.
Well, he speaks American. Okay, what about Colton Herta?
He finished 16th in the F2 feature race and 15th in the F2 sprint race, but he's not in F1, Mr. President.
Well, that does not seem fair to me. These are great American drivers. We deserve to see them in the next match.
You mean race, sir?
That's what some people call it. I prefer to call it a match.
Well, Colton Herta will be racing at the next round of F2, and Lewis Hamilton will race in the F1 category at Spa also.
Well, the way I see it is that F2 has got to be better than F1, right? Because 2 is more than 1. And he scored how many goals, did you say?
No goals, sir. Like I said, he finished 16th in the F2 feature race and 15th in the F2 sprint race.
So he beat the others 16-0. America is the greatest country in the world at auto racing, and nobody knows formula racing better than me.
If that is the case, sir, can I ask, do you know what the F stands for in FIA?
Tell me.
Hello, welcome to Gareth Jones on Speed. I'm the one called Gareth, he's the one called The Zog.
Hello.
The Zog. I dub you The Zog today.
Well, there's usually only one of me around, so I'll take it. Thank you.
I don't think we've ever explained this on the programme, but after 21 years, we might want to. Why are you called Zog? You were called Zog before I met you. I know the story, but...
Yeah. Well, I did simply after the former King of Albania, King Zog of Albania. I used to have a bit of a thing for Albania, a slight obsession. So my friends started calling me Zog a long time ago, and that's why I'm Zog to my friends.
Because you were the Paul, one of many Pauls, but the one who talked about Zog a lot, and that's, you became Paul Zog. It was a qualifier, is that right?
Just Zog. Yeah, and I was talking about, you know, Albania more than specifically Zog. He was the only head of state, as far as I'm aware, ever to shoot back at a would-be assassin on the steps of the Vienna Opera, which is some kind of distinction.
And was he successful in his retaliation? Did he kill the assailant?
I'm not sure. I don't think so. I don't think anybody actually hit anybody. There was just a bit of wild gunplay, and I don't think anyone was injured, fortunately.
Wild gunplay. Is there any other kind? You're playing with guns, that's wild. Hey, how was your wild weekend? I had a lovely weekend. I had my, wait for it, 65th birthday. I am now officially almost pensionable. I don't actually get my pension until I'm 67 because of that thing that they're doing, moving pensions. But I am...
And happy birthday.
Thank you. I'm old now. 65, there is... I don't even say to people I'm getting old. Apparently, I am old. But I'm still rocking.
You certainly are.
Well, you saw I played bass for Sladey the other week in the Wirral. I got invited to play bass for the all-female Slade tribute act, whose bass player couldn't make it. And I stepped in and pretended I wasn't 65 for a while. I was still 21.
And how did that go? How was that? I know you were looking forward to that.
It was unbelievable. I was terrified. I was genuinely terrified. I'm not that good a musician. I'm passable, but I'm certainly not in the same league as the women who play in Sladey, who not only are great musicians individually, but they've been playing together for a while. They are embedded. They know the set. They know the set. What they relied on with me is that I've seen Sladey so many times. I know their set, and I also know Slade's set, and I know how forensically good Sladey are. They play like Slade, with the energy and power and the conviction of the band I fell in love with when I was a young man. That's why I love Sladey. So if I just stuck to the Slade versions, and of course I've been playing bass along to Slade songs at home since I was 12. I think I first got a bass when I was 13 or 14 maybe. So in theory, I should know how to play those songs. Whether I have actually played them live is a moot point, you know. I had to learn them and managed to do it, I think, just about. It was incredible. You know, Zog, my life's ambition was either to be the first Welshman on the moon or the bass player in Slade. That was it when I was a kid.
Indeed. Yes.
I haven't got to the moon yet, but I have got the closest I think I will ever get to being the bass player in Slade, Jimmy Lee. It was my birthday treat. It is what it was. I was in heaven.
Fantastic. No, good to hear. Good to hear. And then you had a British Grand Prix to watch as well.
Yeah.
And how good was that?
Yeah. Man, the British Grand Prix with the sprints. I struggle with sprint weekends. I love them, but it's too much. I can barely devote the entire weekend to watch it.
I know what you mean, but there's an upside to that, which is that there's so much action going on over the weekend, you know, as in qualifying sessions, sprint or Grand Prix race events, that you can actually miss a bit of it and there's still plenty more to keep you entertained. You know, it's you don't kind of feel too badly shortchanged if, you know, maybe you miss one of those qualifying sessions, or okay, maybe you have to miss the sprint. There's still plenty more racing action over the weekend to enjoy.
I won't be happy until the British Grand Prix is a 24-hour race like Le Mans. Oh, that would be terrible, man. I'd have to devote another entire week to watching motorsport. Silverstone, we were there 21 years ago, almost to the day, for the very first episode of Gareth Jones on Speed, Zogger. And it was indeed a bit of a gravel bowl. It looked pristine, I thought, on television this year. Did you see? It looked mown like Wimbledon.
It was a lovely day to be there.
Yeah.
And it was a beautiful day.
Unusually.
Yeah, no, the circuit's fantastic. They've developed it very nicely. It's a fantastic modern Grand Prix circuit, but with a lot of old school appeal. I mean, you know, drivers really love it in a way that they maybe don't often take to some modern circuits. Yeah, it's a great venue and usually throws up a great race. Shame we had a finish under the safety car this time, I think.
One of the great things about Silverstone is that it's one of only some circuits on the F1 calendar which has a name for every corner, not just a number. Yeah, every part of Silverstone is named, like Le Mans, right? We know it. I mean, it's the same at Imola. It's the same at Barcelona, probably. But there are a lot of circuits that simply have numbers. And the straights are named at Silverstone as well. It's the Hamilton Strait and the Wellington Strait, isn't it?
That's right. Yeah.
Who knew that? Diddy David Hamilton, the Radio 1 DJ of the 70s, had a straight named after him at Silverstone. How did that happen?
How on earth did that ever happen?
Who knew? I often noticed that if you misread the names of the shorthand versions of the drivers, you know, Pierre and Ham, such and such, right? I can't help but imagine that Adam Ant is one of the drivers for Mercedes these days. You have Ant for Antonelli.
Yes. Yeah.
Adam Ant. No idea who was in Formula One. Well done, him. Kimi had a good weekend, but not as good as you might have hoped. I've got a theory as to why this happened.
As to why Kimi was not as spectacular as you might have expected.
Yep.
Go on, let's hear it.
It's the colour blue. Well, basically, whenever Mercedes, Petronas, Ineos, Formula One team, whatever they're called, whenever they have a race and decide to wear special coloured overalls, do you remember, was it Hockenheim in 2019 where they were celebrating 125 years of Mercedes-Benz or something like this, and they all wore vintage racing outfits. Even Toto and everyone wore like the classic white cotton racing outfits.
Yeah, I remember that.
And that,
that
was
yeah.
a disastrous weekend. They had a double DNF. And I seem to remember Toto saying, oh, I think it was caused by the fact that we weren't wearing our usual colours and something. And maybe he had a point because, well, George kind of lucked in, didn't he, really, this weekend? But Kimi lucked out.
Yeah, I think I need to see some more data about the different colours thing because, you know, you picked a couple of examples there. I think, you know, I need to see yeah, some more
stronger
data.
Correlation.
And like I say, it was, you know, George got kind of lucky where Kimi got unlucky this weekend. I mean, yeah, I say unlucky. I mean, he was lucky that Ferrari made the decision they did with Lewis's last minute pit stop to put
yeah.
another set of tyres on, to roll the dice there. That, you know, in hindsight, didn't look like a great decision.
He's got the pace, though. No doubt. Kimi's
and he's
got...
looking more confident.
Yeah.
You know, whereas in the last handful of races, you really got the feeling that he was struggling a little bit to deal with Kimi's speed and consistency. You know, he suddenly had a teammate who'd, you know, taken a step up in his performance and who was suddenly, you know, getting result after result, win after win, pole position after pole position. And you really felt that Russell was, you know, struggling to deal with that and to maintain his composure, his focus, and his ability to deliver his best. No, but this weekend, you know, we saw, you know, he can fight equally with Kimi for this championship. You know, he has the skill, he has the mental tools to fight with Antonelli. You know, it's going to be tough for him for the rest of the season, and what I think will be continuing competition from Ferrari is not going to make it easy for him, but it looks good for us as fans for the rest of the season.
I didn't complete that thought, by the way, Zog, about the colour blue. I don't know if you noticed that the pit crew at Silverstone were all wearing blue.
I did, yes.
Yeah, yeah. And you know why they were wearing blue?
Wasn't it to do... No, I can't remember. I can't remember. And, oh, no, was it to do with a transporter
yeah.
that
yeah.
Mercedes used to have that I think... I've seen some quite nice 1/18th scale models of. I think CNC do quite a nice Mercedes transporter, which I think is the same one.
It's yeah, the what was called the Schnellrenn transporter, also known as the Blue Wonder, 1954 high speed race car transporter designed by, I'm reading this, Rudi Ullenhout. It featured a distinctive deep blue livery, a 3-litre straight yep. six engine from the 300 SL, and a top speed of 106 miles per hour. I wonder if that is with a load on the back or empty. And
yep.
it was very low profile. It was like cab forward.
Yep.
The cab was ahead of the steering wheels. Very aerodynamic. Amazing piece of kit. I'm not quite sure why they were celebrating it. Is it some anniversary of that? I don't know. Of a first win
don't
or
know.
Something?
No, can't. Don't know.
But yeah, stick to silver and Petronas, turquoise, greeny, blue, and yeah, stick to your usual colours. You'll be fine. No more tricky weekends for Mercedes. Actually, their reliability hasn't been 100%. They're working on that, aren't they, Mercedes? They've had battery issues, haven't they?
Yes, they have. And I mean, it was something completely different that sidetracked, that gave Antonelli trouble this weekend. Problems at the front of the car that weren't fixed with a new wing. Yeah, they have not been. They haven't had the, you know, almost bulletproof reliability that they've benefited from in recent years. But they're still quick. You know, at least they have the speed to win races. And you know, you'd rather have a fast but slightly fragile car is better than a slow, reliable one.
And pretty much any car looks fast in the hands of Kimi Antonelli at the moment, and George is no slouch. But I was pleased to see the resurgent Leclerc. You know, Leclerc has lost a little bit of momentum over the last couple of races as Lewis has finally got his feet under the table. But to see Leclerc come back is good. You know, I love Leclerc. I respect him as an individual. I rate him as a driver. And he must have been hammered to see Lewis getting the better of him finally.
Yeah, I love Leclerc. He's I'm absolutely a fan, but I'm more of a fan of Lewis Hamilton. So I feel trapped in this slight bind where, at the same time, I'm really happy for Charles winning that race and getting a good result, and, you know, getting a bit more sort of confidence back and knowing that he can beat Lewis. I'd rather that Lewis beat him. You know, it's
of course,
but yeah. So I want Lewis to beat Leclerc, you know, just enough times this year that he can take the Drivers' Championship. Not beat him all the time, you know. Charles has to have a few results in there, some better results to, you know, have a respectable season. We just need to get that balance right. That's what I'm looking for the rest of the year.
The balance right? Yeah, well, I've been saying all Lewis has got to do really at Ferrari is beat Leclerc. He's just got to be quicker than Leclerc. That's all he needs to target. If he can do that, the car will do the rest, if you like. And that sort of balance between Leclerc and Lewis, each triumphing over the other, is starting to even up a little bit now. But you're saying as long as it just finishes where Lewis is one ahead of Leclerc, you're happy.
Well, one ahead or wherever it takes to win the Drivers' Championship. You know, I think.
Yeah.
Well, I haven't run the number, so I don't know quite what possible results would get us there. But
A long way to go, and I think it was mooted today that the FIA are trying to reinstate one of the two Middle East Grand Prix that we had to miss due to the Iran issues.
Yeah.
And I think they're going to bring back Bahrain. I think that one is going to happen at some point. So there are more points on the table, but we've still got, I don't know how many races to go. It's a massive season. You know, a lot can happen. You said earlier on in the season that this would end up being a development arms race this season. Who do you say is winning the development arms race at the moment?
I mean, so far, probably from the start of the season, I think you'd maybe have to say Red Bull have, you know, made a lot of progress. Ferrari have made good progress. I think, yeah, probably those two. We keep hearing about a big upgrade to come from Aston Martin. It'll be interesting to see what that actually turns out to be.
They need more than an upgrade. They need a pick up and drop, don't they? I mean, they are lost behind Cadillac. I mean, to be in that position is surprising, isn't it? How have they got it so wrong?
Well, they got it so wrong, you know, I think we've discussed before, because they started developing this year's car too late, simple as that. They didn't have enough time to develop it, and also Honda were probably not putting the level of resources into the powertrain that other people were, and the combination of sort of the short timescale and scale of the Honda project, and then some, I think, unexpected issues that came up to do with the packaging of the powertrain. Yeah, those have all contributed to the extremely poor state that they're in.
Up and down the grid, Hulk, who you may remember last year, deposed Lewis, didn't he, from the podium? Yeah, last year, Hulk got third at the British Grand Prix and prevented Lewis from doing so, if memory serves, something like that. This year, he had a DNF, I think, Hulk, didn't he? Yeah, I don't know which lap, but didn't work out for him. The British Grand Prix is a tough one, isn't it? Because it's a fast, aggressive circuit. I mean, they're all fast, but isn't Silverstone the circuit with the fastest average speed, even above Monza? I think that's right.
As you were starting to ask that, I was thinking, no, Monza's the circuit with the fastest average speed. No, I think Monza's quicker, is it not?
I'd need to check that. I think there's some surprising figure about the Silverstone. So, oh my God, that was interesting. I didn't realise that. I can't remember.
The fastest racing lap record is still surely held by Monza. Hang on,
Okay, yeah, have a look.
Google, see what Google says.
The fastest racing lap. I'm going to try and guess when this would have been. Wow, when the car's outrageously fast. Okay, maybe it was in the Kurz era. So, what's that, 2012 or thereabouts? That's my guess. Or is it going to be earlier than that? I can't wait to find out.
Okay, fastest lap in any Formula One session, Max Verstappen in the 2025 Italian Grand Prix qualifying at Monza, 164.5 miles per hour.
Last year was the record. Wow. Okay. Well, I'll dig into that fact about Silverstone. I've misunderstood it somehow, or I heard something that was surprising about Silverstone being the fastest. It was described as the fastest circuit for some reason. I thought, hang on, why? And I can't remember the explanation.
I mean, maybe there's something. Well, I mean, there could be a difference between sort of, you know, average speed and top speed. So
it's possible.
Maybe you get a slightly higher top speed at Silverstone, whereas at Monza you get a slightly higher. Although the highest you'll get is lower, you get a higher average speed. No, that's what you'd be able to say. The highest speed you'll reach is at Silverstone, but the highest average speed is at Monza. In other words, during a lap of Silverstone, so let's say setting your 165 mile an hour average speed lap at Monza, you top out at 220 miles an hour. At Silverstone, you set an average speed of 164 miles an hour, but the highest speed you reach during the lap is 225. Lower average, highest top speed. So average speed at Monza, 164.5, but maybe you get a higher top speed at Silverstone. That's my guess.
We had five British drivers at the British Grand Prix this year.
Fantastic! No, it's a real, you know, it's a real golden age for British drivers in Formula One.
All English drivers, I will qualify as well, British, but they're all English. Although Arvid Lindblad's dad is Swedish, Lando's mum is Belgian.
Yeah, that's right.
And Ollie Bearman, I can't work out if he's German, French, English, or American when he speaks.
And Alex Albon obviously has dual British Thai nationality.
That's five and a half drivers, technically, because he races on a Thai license, doesn't he? He's got a
I think he does now, passport. Yes.
Wow, yeah. Lando, George, Ollie Bearman, Arvid Lindblad, and half of Alex Albon. Brilliant.
And Lewis Hamilton.
Yeah, but he's American, isn't he? He always has been. Did you watch the build-up much? Did you watch...
I didn't, unfortunately, see the Lego kart race, which I was rather looking forward to. But no, stuff was happening, and I didn't manage to watch the Lego opener. That would have been... Yeah, I rather wanted to see that.
I think they left shards of Lego, which, as we all know, a Lego brick is one of the sharpest things known in history, if you've got bare feet. I think they left some Lego shards on the circuit that may have caused issues during the race. That's not serious, by the way. That's what everyone was joking about at the circuit.
Yeah.
Don't sue me, Lego. That did not happen. I'm talking about people are joking about while they were there. But it wasn't the Lego thing for me that got my attention. It was Brundle's pit walk. And we love Martin Brundle, right? Everybody loves Martin Brundle, apart from Kim Kardashian, who doesn't seem to know who he is. And shame on her for that. But the love for Brundle was in full effect during the pit walk. He came up to, is her name Amanda Waddington? Is that her name? Very tall, blonde British actress who is in...
Hannah Waddingham.
Hannah Waddingham, that's it. Thank you.
Ted Lasso and Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones, yeah.
Hannah Waddingham.
She kind of took over Brundle's pit walk and said, hang on, never mind all this. What about Martin Brundle? And she made him put his mic down and gave him a great big hug. And she really values him. She likes her motorsport. She was very knowledgeable about what was going on.
I think she is a genuine fan. Didn't she sing the national anthem a couple of years ago, at the Grand Prix, didn't she?
I don't know. I didn't realise she was a singist.
It's possible I just made that up. But I have an idea that she...
If I can make up the fastest circuit, you can make up whatever you want as well. It's fine. No one's listening. No one's writing and checking these facts. The vibe, though, was even warmer, because Brundle bumped into Nigel Mansell, who, of course, known forever. And Mansell was kind of warm and, I would say, elderly, but kindly and soft. And they ended up hugging as well. It was universal hug Martin Brundle Day. Hmm. And I got quite tearful. I've never felt like that about Mansell. I was never a Mansell fan. I was Damon Hill, and before that, Jackie Stewart. I kind of miss Mansell. But I felt a real emotional connection to him and his kindly old ways. He was really nice. And that made me feel really good about the British Grand Prix. And then someone called, and I love her name, Deb Aura, sang God Save the King. Now, that song annoys me. I think in terms of a piece of music, a melody, it's a dirge. There are far better anthems. As a sentiment, I don't think as a nation we'd be singing about God saving the king. We should be singing about the nation and the people we are in that nation. That's what makes an anthem for me.
I've kind of mixed feelings about it. I agree there are sort of objectively better national anthems. I really like the French national anthem. I'd love it if we could swap with the French national anthem.
Yeah.
But I don't have a problem with national anthems having sort of rather stupid, ridiculous, absurd lyrics that you don't agree with.
There's some of that in the French national anthem, isn't there?
Absolutely. About taking up arms. There's always crazy stuff about smiting your enemies and rivers of blood and victories and stuff that you might describe and celebrate history that not everybody wants to celebrate, or sort of celebrates a system of government that you might not be a fan of.
Yeah.
I don't care about that at all. I think national anthems, in a way, should be rather ridiculous, anachronistic hodgepodges of awkward history.
Well, they were written in different times, weren't they?
You don't have to sing the national anthem if you don't like it. Just put up with it and, it's going to celebrate. Yeah, no, I think you have to embrace all that nonsense, in a way.
Well, I love an anthem. I can sing the Finnish national anthem in Finnish. I can sing the Czech national anthem in Czech, and of course the Welsh national anthem. I'm going to learn La Marseillaise for next year so I can lead the singing in the stands. I'd love to be able to do that. But God Save the Queen, not a song I enjoy for lots of reasons. I've no problem with being British. I love the idea of being British. I think Britain deserves a better number one hit than that one. But the woman who sang it, Deb Aura, that can't be a real name. Apparently she came from The Voice. And she had a really, really nice voice. I thought she sang it well.
Really? I thought she sang it terribly.
I thought she sang it quite nicely. She didn't over-detail it, over-complicate it. There were a few wibble-wobbles in an American accent here and there.
Well, that's exactly the bit that I take issue with. I think if you've got to sing a national anthem like that, sing a national anthem. I think you sing it straight.
Don't mess with it.
Yeah, you don't mess with it. You do it in a very boring, straight-laced way. National anthem is a kind of boring, straight-laced thing. Just, be honest with it, be direct with it. Just sing that, rather silly, boring tune straight out. Don't do all that melisma nonsense of,
what do you call it?
Melisma. I think M-A-L-I-S-M-A. It's when you, in the middle of a note, melisma, rather than holding a single note, okay? Showing off.
I blame Stevie Wonder. He started all that, didn't he?
Well, I'm going to give Stevie Wonder a pass 100% on that. I'm not going to give anybody a pass when they're singing a national anthem.
Yeah.
you always tend to get in the, anytime somebody's singing the American national anthem at the start of a sporting event, it's, going way over the top on how wildly you vary the pitch. How wildly you soar around in the middle of a line, in the middle of a syllable. I'm not into it, is what I'm saying. So, I thought it wasn't a great rendition of that.
It's the very definition of Americanism, you could argue, going over the top. America has that ability to do that and then some. So it is an American form of singing, isn't it? And it's cultural.
And, because, we're famous for our restraint and our low-key approach.
That's me.
We shouldn't be doing that with our national issue. We should keep it boring. Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
Like mumbling hymns in churches. Next race. Looking forward now to Spa, followed by Hungary. And then we've got a bit of a gap. And I've got a plan for the summer music compilation this year, but I won't tell you now. But it's coming, the summer music compilation for 2026. But we've got two more races before that. Spa. Who goes well at Spa? Max often goes well at Spa. Could be a resurgent Ferrari. Kimi be looking to make up for the points that he hasn't earned at the British Grand Prix? It's on, isn't it? It really is on. There are plenty of contenders, and the McLarens should surely be ready for a half an upgrade and be back in the mix, surely?
It is on, and personally, I'm looking to Ferrari to carry on consolidating the progress they've made in the last few races and to show that their increase of pace is real and it's going to carry on throughout the rest of the season.
Let's hope so. And also let's hope that the Aston Martin upgrade puts them from last on the grid to the quickest car on the grid, mixing it up even further. That would make it exciting.
Well, given that I do have a bet riding on whether Cadillac can beat anybody this season, I could really do with the Aston Martin upgrade being disastrous. Yeah, just from a purely self-interested point of view, I need their upgrade to suck.
One final thought. Poor Cadillac. Paint their car in special colours to celebrate 250 years of the untied states of America, and we never hardly saw the car all weekend on television.
Yeah.
So heartbreaking. Okay, one last thought. That McLaren in the original McLaren colours of white and green down the middle, did it work for you?
Weren't they colours from the movie Grand Prix?
It was the first McLaren that Bruce raced in was in that colours before they went to Papaya, apparently.
Well, they're celebrating
1,000 years of McLaren, I think, this year. I think that's what it is. Pretty sure it's 1,000.
I found it, it was much harder to spot the McLarens this weekend. Yeah. That was the problem I had with it. Yeah, I kept confusing them for Mercedes.
Yeah. All racing bulls.
Yeah, so the sooner they go back to their regular livery for this season, the better, as far as I'm concerned. Good.
Everybody, stick to your usual coloured overalls and usual outfits. We like it. No, mix it up. I love it when you mix it up. Makes it interesting. You've been listening to me, Gareth, and him, Zog.
Goodbye.
We're going to leave you with a very short tune. Here is my suggestion for what the anthem should be, melody and lyrics, and it represents an idea, a sentiment that I think we can all get behind. See you for more Work and Speed in 2 weeks. Enjoy the anthem.
Ladies and gentlemen, would you please be upstanding for the British National Anthem of Motorsport.
This show, then please like, share and subscribe. For information on how to contact the show, see pictures, read song lyrics, follow us on social media, or to sponsor this podcast, go to garethjones.tv. Gareth Jones on Speed is made in Wales by Whiz Bang.
Gareth Jones on Speed!